Welcome to the Freedom Line, the podcast for the Center for Individual Freedom, where we meet nonsense with common sense. Here's your host, Renee Giacchino.
Thank you for tuning into the Freedom Cast. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. Joining me now is my colleague, Tim Lee. Tim serves as Senior Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs. Tim, it's always a pleasure to have you join me. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate you having me.
So there's some exciting news out of Washington, D.C. That's not something you get to say too often, actually, now that I think about it. But there's some exciting news. There's some legislation that's been introduced. I think it's very timely in a lot of respects, certainly for anyone who's been to the gas pumps lately. But this is a piece of legislation that's been co-sponsored by U.S. Representative Harry Hagman and then, I believe, Ted Cruz as well. They introduced the Stop Climate Shakedowns Act of 2026. Sort of sounds like the name says it all, but Tim, give us the background on this.
Well, this legislation targets lawsuits that target themselves, energy companies and America's energy sector. And so what they do is they realize that even litigation costs, whether or not you lose a verdict in court, is almost beside the point sometimes. A lot of these plaintiffs' attorneys, they seek out lawsuits against energy companies in America and America's energy sector. And they try to hold them liable for things that happened decades or even almost a century ago. And so there's a Supreme Court case actually that just addressed the issue. And it dealt with a lawsuit against energy companies for extracting oil at the government's request. This was a government contract during World War II. Obviously, aviation fuel for fighter planes and bombers and transports that we were using during World War II required fuel extraction from America. And they did it pursuant to federal contracts and federal requests as part of the World War II effort. And yet, here we are in 2026, and some of these plaintiffs' attorneys were suing them for environmental damage. And there was even immunity for these energy companies saying, look, we'll hold you immune from extracting energy from the ground. Well, they were saying, okay, but that was extraction. Now we're talking about transport or storage or anything else. Supreme Court said, by a 9-0 vote, which tells you something, because when even Ketanji Brown Jackson doesn't side with you, you know you've gone too far, said, no. You can't be suing these energy companies for activities that occurred in World War II, almost a century ago, at the request of the federal government and pursuant to an actual legal contract with the federal government. You can't be suing these energy companies and shaking them down like this. So that's actually what the legislation targets. It's these age-old environmental issues, and plaintiffs' lawyers just sue, knowing they probably can't even win. But a lot of these energy companies will just give up and say, you know what, it's not even worth the fight. We're just going to settle this case, move on. And what does that do? Well, it actually drives America's energy sector beyond the country. And it inhibits becoming even more energy independent and using America's energy sector and all the jobs that creates here in America. And it sort of outsources it to foreign countries. And so that's what this legislation aims to prevent. And so it would target these lawsuits, these abusive lawsuits by plaintiffs' attorneys, and even retroactively make them illegal. So it's really good news. And for those who support American energy independence and just sanity within our legal system, it's something to be encouraged and welcomed. And so, as you said, Ted Cruz was one of the leaders in the Senate, along with such other reliables as Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, Ted Budd from North Carolina, and Mike Lee from Utah, along with Harriet Hegeman from Wyoming. She's the representative in Congress. So they're all working together for this. And just those names alone let you know that it's a pretty reliable, good legislation and common sense legislation.
So, Tim, what does this mean as well, do you think, looking forward? Because as I understand it, some of this legislation, it's going to prohibit the retroactive climate liability lawsuits like you talked about. But we're also seeing a lot of states get involved. And I think, you know, if we were to dive deeply into it, undoubtedly, we're going to find that, you know, some of those state attorneys who are suing for climate change reasons, suing the energy companies, are probably being funded by the same individuals who are funding some of these Superfund climate lawsuits that are happening against these America's energy producers. Will the Stop Climate Shakedowns Act of 2026 have an impact on those lawsuits that are being filed, do you think, by the states, or even legislation that's being passed by the states in an attempt to set themselves up to be able to sue for climate change, to sue the, you know, the energy industry for, you know, causing, in their words or whatever, climate change?
That is a great question, and you touch on one of the important aspects of the proposed legislation. So think about California as probably the best example, and Gavin Newsom, and the way he's trying to prepare himself for a 2028 presidential run. Yes, states like California under Gavin Newsom, or places like Illinois under Pritzker, who also probably wants to run, or New York, or any number of other states like that that are extremist to the left politically, they want to curry favor with their campaign donors and with the far left by suing these energy companies on behalf of the state. So earlier I talked about plaintiffs' attorneys. You know, these are in the private sector who are targeting these energy companies. But the states are doing it as well, as you mentioned. And that is an important aspect of this, because it would target states like California who are trying to sue these energy companies out of business. And think about California as an example also, because it's such a big state and such a populous state that if something happens in California, it almost directly forces energy companies to apply the same standards throughout the rest of the country. So, for instance, you hear about this in automobile standards sometimes. You know, if California says, we're going to mandate that any cars sold in California get at least 50 miles per gallon if they're internal combustion engines. Well, okay, you can look at it if you're Ford or Chevrolet or any car manufacturer and say, well, okay, that's fine. We'll just do that in California. We'll just sell these over 50 miles per gallon cars in California. The problem is that California is such a huge market just based on the sheer number of people that live there. And by the way, they're not going to be there long if present trends continue, because everybody in California is moving to Texas or Florida or Utah or Arizona. So it may not even be that way for long. But right now, California is such a populated state that it doesn't make any sense for car companies to keep just manufacturing specific cars for California. It forces them to essentially change the way they do business nationwide and even worldwide. Well, it's the same way with any energy companies. And if Gavin Newsom is suing an energy company saying, you have to do X, Y, and Z, and we're suing you for this, well, it kind of forces those energy companies to change the way they behave in other states across the country. And so the way the legislation helps is by targeting that and saying, no, this is a national industry. America's energy sector is not a state-by-state issue. It's a national issue. This is truly interstate commerce, which the Constitution gives the national government the right to regulate. So the legislation that we're talking about here, the Stop Climate Shakedowns Act, would say to states like California or Illinois, no, you can't just be suing these energy companies for all of these retroactive lawsuits and things that happened 80 years ago. Because that disrupts this interstate commerce. This disrupts America's energy sector. It doesn't just affect California. It affects the entire country and America's national security, frankly, when we're talking about something like energy. So it is very helpful that it does that. So it makes you make a good point in asking that question. And that's an important part of the legislation to emphasize.
Well, and something that you just touched on very briefly, but I think it bears repeating. You know, our energy security is very closely related to our national security. I mean, we're clearly seeing that play out in the Middle East right now.
Yeah. And think about, I mean, you and I are a little bit too young to remember this, but back in the early 70s, during the Yom Kippur War, the OPEC nations boycotted, or at least some of them refused to sell oil to America, back at a time when we were much more dependent on foreign oil. Or even in the late 70s under Jimmy Carter, or even into the 90s when we were involved in the first Gulf War. Back then, before fracking and before America's domestic energy sector took off again, we were much more reliant on those foreign countries. So not only could they harm us in terms of security by cutting off our oil, but they could drive up the price of oil, and that obviously wrecks our economy. Today, America produces more petroleum than any country in the world, which 20 years ago, people would have laughed at you when you suggested that that might be the case. They'd say, no, 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 we'll never match Russia or Saudi Arabia. Well, here we are. Now we do. And so you're right that energy independence is a matter of national security. We can't be choked off by Iran or Saudi Arabia or Russia or any other country because we produce more than we consume now and we export. Which would have been remarkable again 20 years ago if you'd told somebody, if you could go back in time and tell somebody that, they'd probably laugh at you. So it is a matter of national security. And I should add one thing. We at CFIF, and I know you personally and I personally, are very much in favor of the federalist system and to the degree that it encourages states' rights to govern where appropriate. We want individual states to be laboratories of democracy. So if California wants to have high taxes, high income taxes on its residents, great. Let Florida or Tennessee have no income taxes and let's see which one works. You know, let people decide. If Florida works better, people are going to move to Florida. If California works better, people are going to move to California or Illinois. Well, we see how that plays out in real life. So we certainly favor states' rights on matters that truly are of state concern. Here's the problem. There are times where you do not want states behaving individually. Things that deal with interstate commerce are a good example. We talked about the auto industry earlier, or the energy industry now, or for instance, with trucks. There's a very famous Supreme Court case that, you know, I think it was Iowa, that said you can't have trucks coming through Iowa that are longer than X number of feet. Well, what does that do? That means somebody who wants to ship something from, Ohio to Colorado has to go through Iowa, and they can't. And because Iowa can just create this cog in the entire machine. So when they drafted the Constitution, and by the way, the Constitution was drafted to replace the Articles of Confederation, where states were going to economic warfare in this very manner. The Founding Fathers said, we need to create a country where that's not allowed, where truly interstate commerce is involved. The national government gets to write the rules because you can't have this spaghetti bowl of contradictory laws in each of the 50 states. There weren't 50 states back then, but the number of states that there are or were, you can't have just each state being different because then you just can't have a functioning national economy. So there are parts like energy or like the auto industry, or, you know, we work a lot on telecommunications issues. Those are national issues. Those aren't state issues. And you can't have states like California disrupting the entire country. And so that's what this legislation does as well. It asserts that Congress, not states like California or governors like Gavin Newsom, can write the rules. This is a national industry. We can't have people like Gavin Newsom impacting our national security and our energy sector. And so it puts in the federal government's hands what is rightfully appropriated to it by the Constitution, interstate commerce control. And that's what this does as well.
Our guest is Tim Lee, Senior Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs at the Center for Individual Freedom. Tim, before I let you go, I want to shift gears just slightly. If you could give us a little bit of a sneak peek into what you are writing about this week, what folks will be able to see go up on our website at cfif.org, and what will go out to emails to folks who sign up, you know, to get information sent to them through our website at cfif.org. Tell me, what are you writing about this week?
I'm writing about a Supreme Court decision that came out last week. It was a 6-3 decision, so this one wasn't unanimous. Some of the more, I'll try to be cordial and not call them insane. Yes. The three leftist judges did dissent, but it was a 6-3 decision overturning a voting rights scheme whereby racial considerations played too great a role. And so I couch it in terms of the fact that, you know, on July 4th, we're going to celebrate America's 250th birthday. And the Declaration of Independence, which created America, refers to the fact that all men are created equal. Now, we haven't perfectly practiced that through the years, but one of the ways that we haven't practiced it and that we have violated the Declaration of Independence's claim that that all men are created equal is by engaging in things like racial gerrymandering. And the Supreme Court said enough. In the same way that they threw out so-called affirmative action in previous years, and about 10 years ago said you can't discriminate based on race if you're the government in hiring and employment, similarly, you can't do that with voting either. We need to be a nation where all men truly are created equal, and women, obviously. And we can't have this sort of racial bean counting and gerrymandering for voting rights. And so they threw that out. And so I write about this week, and the Supreme Court came to the right decision. It makes us a less racist government, and it moves us toward the Declaration of Independence's claim that all men are created equal as we approach its 250th birthday. So that's what I'm writing about this week.
Well, thanks, Tim. Thanks for the sneak peek. People will love to read that at cfif.org. As always, Tim, it's a pleasure to have you with me. We will certainly have you back, if not before we celebrate the 250th, then right soon after, because I'm sure you'll be writing something fascinating then as well. Again, our guest has been Tim Lee, Senior Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs at the Center for Individual Freedom. Follow Tim and his work at cfif.org. Have a wonderful afternoon, Tim.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great week.